1204 during the week means one thing on KVOI. It's the Buckmaster Show. My friend Ray Allen is engineering and producing the show on the other side of the glass. It is our midweek edition. It is the 22nd of March, 2017. Hope the week at the midway point, at least, is going well for you. About this time, many people start looking ahead already to the weekend. Anyway, we are coming to you from AM 1030 KVOI. We've got our live podcasts available on my website and KVOI.com. So it's BuckmasterShow.com and KVOI.com. Got you covered. We've got you covered with our podcasts and the complete show archive at BuckmasterShow.com. What a full hour we've got. Councilman Steve Kasacek, Democrat representing Ward number 6 for the first half hour, and then the one and only David Fitzsimmons. We'll spend half an hour with Fitz from 12:30 to about 1 o'clock this afternoon. But right now, let's go on the live line to Sound City Councilman Steve Kasacek. Councilman, how are you today?
Bill, feeling like I've been rode hard and put down wet, so nothing but easy questions today, okay?
Yeah, I'll try to be very easy on you. And it won't be really hard as far as subject material, because there are at least three major items that I want to talk about from the meeting last night. Let's begin with the hands. Well, it's a ban on using your cell phone while driving. Now, you voted along with Councilman Fimbrace no on this particular ban.
Right. It's the hands-free ordinance, which means essentially when you're driving your car, don't be talking on the phone. Don't be using your tablet or your GPS system. If the phone's in your hand or your electronic device is in your hand, you're not paying attention to what you ought to be doing. Richard and I voted against it, you're right, but we voted against it for completely different reasons. It would be nice if the star would include the reason for the dissent. I've had that conversation with reporters before. I think that's an important piece of information for people. The way the council crafted this ordinance is that the hands-free ban is a secondary offense. That means that if a cop sees you on your phone or dealing with your tablet while you're driving down the street, they cannot pull you over for that. They have to see some other violation, and then, oh, by the way, if they pull you over for that and they see had seen you talking on your phone, they can give you a ticket. So my sense was that this is effectively meaningless as a secondary offense until someone gets in an accident or they're swerving all over the road, so the cop has another reason to pull them over anyway. So that's why I voted no, because I think it should be a primary offense.
Like in Oro Valley, correct?
Yeah, and like our texting ban, which we have had as a primary offense, but we got rid of that because the police correctly had said that it's really, really difficult to enforce, and so we've had that in effect for, I don't know, 3 years or something like that, and they've issued a handful of tickets. In the meantime, people are driving around talking on their phone all the time, and it's, you know, people will argue against it based on inconvenience, but just intuitively, you know, people understand that it's just not safe to drive and be on your phone at the same time. So I opposed it because I don't believe it's going to be effective as a secondary measure. The council agreed to bring it back in 6 months after TPD gathers some data, and what I said at the dais last night was that this should be primary. And 6 months from now, we will not have learned anything that we don't know right now about whether it's effective as a secondary, and that's why I was a no.
And the measure, if someone were to be stopped and they were involved in an accident, we're talking what, about $2,500 fine? Is that what we're talking?
If there's an accident involved, yes. If you are stopped and there is no accident involved, the first offense is $250, and the second offense and thereafter are $500. If you're involved in an accident, it's $2,500 initially.
Let's talk about this red tag issue. Students are just furious about this, Councilman. Upping basically the council unanimously backing changes to the city's so-called red tag ordinance concerning noise complaints. What's the bottom line here?
Students, a handful of students are maybe furious, but I will tell you who's really furious, and that is those are the private property owners who have the ability to enjoy their property in the areas, largely the areas surrounding campus. No big surprise there. We at the beginning of every semester, every spring, every fall, we have just a spike in the number of large parties that are going on. And Bill, these aren't just the boonies that you and I used to go out to. And, you know, well, I'm assuming.
Oh yes, out in the river wash, right?
Back in the day when you were out there bothering a few coyotes. These are in the middle of residential areas. We have had, and it's a new day, and we've had sexual assaults at some of these parties. We have had actually property owners from where the parties are taking place call and ask for police assistance, because now what they've got what are called texting parties. And so you and me and four or five other people can get invited over, and we're texting our buddies on the way over, and so what began as a party of 5 or 10 people turns into one of, you know, 200 or 300 people streaming out into the streets.
Wow.
All night long. And so the police have discretion. They can show up, and if it's a fairly docile thing going on, they'll just knock on the door and say, hey, kind of hold it down, we got some complaints. But if there are serious issues going on, and we've also had student housing projects off campus where they've hired a DJ and they've hired security and they've got the place locked down, but they're outside with a live band going on, and you know, it's just inappropriate for a residential area. So yeah, the students may be upset that we upped the ante. We did not just do it willy-nilly. This has been an incremental approach. It began at $100 fine for them. That was completely ineffective, didn't get anybody's attention. And so now the penalty is a $500 fine. And on your second and subsequent offenses, we're also going to make you pay for the cops' time to show up. It's a waste of police resources to have to go and bust these parties up. And they could be doing more appropriate things out in the community, protecting the public. So, with a cap of $1,000 on that. So, they had a couple of students at the council meeting last night, and one of them is a guy who has been passing this petition around.
Mm-hmm.
And I reached out to him, and I said, his name is Clark Noble. He's the guy who began the petition. Oddly enough, he's with a Zona Zoo, so that would maybe indicate something as well. But I've reached out to Clark already, and we have a meeting set up with him. I said, bring whoever you want from campus, and I've reached out to 10 or 15 of the neighborhood presidents from around campus, and I want to introduce them so they can understand one another's perspectives, and most importantly, to invite Clark and the students to become a part of the community around campus and become a part of some of the solutions. I go to neighborhood meetings all the time, Bill, and the average age is about ours.
Huh.
And
oh boy.
They would love to have young people involved,
mm-hmm.
doing community work in the neighborhoods, just being active participants in their neighborhood associations. So I'm going to make the introductions. We're going to have that meeting in a couple of weeks, and I hope it's productive, and I hope it's a good way forward. But as far as the red tags are concerned, the residents around campus are just fed up with having to put up with this all the time, and they deserve some protection from the city.
Let's go to the live line. Terry called us at 790-2040. Terry, do you have something to add about the red tag issue?
Yes, I'm a professor at the University of Arizona. I'm retiring this year. I've been teaching 45 years, and I must comment, and again, I hate to stereotype, there's some good students I've never seen in the last couple of years, so much entitlement and so selfishness from students in my life. It's almost to the point right now, we're just finishing spring break. Spring break is no longer 1 week. You should see the excuses I'm getting why they can't come to class this week because of the long extended vacation. So good for you. You know what? I think the only thing that gets their attention is that aspect that they're going to have to pay some more. Otherwise, there's no punitive things for them. That they'll park illegally on campus, and they'll say no big deal because their parents will pay the $50 or whatever.
Wow.
So anyhow, I just wanted to vent. Good for you. You know, keep it up. Maybe they'll learn that they have to be less selfish in the world.
Okay. Thank you, Terry, a professor from the U of A.
Terry, let me make a couple of comments. First of all, thank you. The entitlement mentality really does strike me as well. And so what's disappointing to me is that with all of the very serious issues going on right now in the world, in the community, the cause celeb happens to be, I want to be allowed to party more. And that's disappointing to me. These are tomorrow's leaders. And so we're going to bring them to the table with some of the neighborhood presidents and say, this is the impact you're having on us as private property owners. If you want to be a part of the community, great. We'll welcome you in. But if you want to be a part of a problem, then we're going to hit you in the pocketbook. And Terry's also right. The $100 fines, as I mentioned, weren't getting anybody's attention. It's usually the parents who write a check from some other area code in California. So we've been dealing with this since these kids were cutting their teeth back in area code 928 in LA or wherever it is, and we're dealing with it locally now.
All right, stick around, Steve Kasachek. We'll be right back with you. It's the Buckmaster Show, 12:15 on a lovely Wednesday afternoon. Be right back.
Remodeling, restoring, or building new additions to your home?
Five Star has termite and pest solutions for you. Treatments to building materials can be performed while tradesmen continue to work. Worried about treatment marks? Don't be. Our treatments will be completed before texture and paint. Five Star will provide landscaping and drainage advice to eliminate moisture and other pest and termite attractions around the home.
Five Star Termite and Pest Control, protecting homes and homeowners since 1980. 886-0045.
Five Star Pest Control. We know what bugs you.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastro pub, serving an impressive menu of craft beer and fine fare. Choose from more than 175 beers from around the world, plus wine and a full bar. Enjoy delicious soups, salads, burgers, sandwiches, hearty entrees, and more. Craft beer, fine fare, great service, and stunning views. Noble Hops, perfect for lunch, dinner, happy hour, late night, and any time in between. Open daily at La Cañada and Lambert Lane in Oro Valley. The Regional Transportation Authority and its members are working together to deliver transportation improvements to our region. More than 770 improvements have been completed to date. The success of the RTA is built upon collaboration and leadership that focuses on addressing our regional mobility needs to make our region a safer, more efficient, and more vibrant place to live. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
Hi, this is Sean McCluskey, co-owner and designated broker for Rincon Ventures. If you're a rental owner by choice or by accident, and you're looking to hire or change property management companies, consider Rincon Ventures. We employ an aggressive web-based advertising strategy to market your rental. We thoroughly screen prospective tenants and conduct routine property inspections. Our online system gives tenants the ability to pay rent and file maintenance requests instantly over the web. Our owners can use the same system to instantly check on their properties. Call Rincon Ventures at 881-2258 or visit us on the web at rvprop.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
This is Bill Buckmaster. Green Things has been the place for all things green for the Buckmaster household for many years. From 2-inch succulents to 10-foot tall palms and desert trees, Green Things has it all on 13 acres and 33 greenhouses full of plants, pottery, and gardening supplies. Visit Green Things at 3384 East River Road by the Rito Riverwalk and on the web at greenthingsaz.com. This is Bill Buckmaster, Thursday at noon, turning wastewater into beer. Also, we'll talk with Jason Jacobs. Mr. Jacobs is the administrator of Tucson's Reed Park Zoo. Buckmaster's on AM 1030 KVOI with Worldwide Live Listening. We've got our podcasts and pretty much 6 years worth of programs archived at buckmastershow.com. All right, let's go back now to the live line, 790-2040, Ward 6, Tucson City Councilman Steve Kasacek is on the live line. Coming up in about 10 minutes, David Fitzsimmons, actually Fitz is with me in studio right now. He's kind of listening along here. He's ready to go. So always controversial, so folks can call Fitz and tell him what they think of him at 790-2040. There may be some very nice compliments that might come in for you, Fitz. So you're ready to do it, right?
I am.
Okay.
Ready.
Yes.
There should be compliments for him. He was an MC at an event over the weekend in support of the wildlife, not museum, but the wildlife center where they're. They take animals that have been injured and they rehabilitate them. That wildlife center is kind of fighting tooth and nail against the state game and fish department right now to keep their licensing, and they do a wonderful job. So Fitz was out supporting them, and I think he deserves kudos for that.
He does, and I was just asking Fitz how many events he does a year, and it's probably well over 100, isn't it, Fitz?
It's well over 100.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to that event. I went to the one last year for the Tucson Wildlife Center.
Uh-huh.
Lisa Bates and her team there just do an amazing job.
Yeah, so, she's a great story, and yeah. I bet she'd be a great interview.
Yeah, she is. I've had her on the show before. I'll have to get her on again. Councilman, what about this hate crime law that was passed unanimously last night?
I will tell you that I am seriously concerned with how divided this country, this community is since the election, and I'm even more concerned about the amping up of the level of rhetoric that we hear on both sides, frankly. And we have a statewide hate crimes ordinance or statute already in place, but only applies to felonies. And so what we did last night was that we adopted a local hate crimes ordinance that now can attach to misdemeanors that otherwise would just be a graffiti, for instance. If someone goes out and paints a swastika on the side of the Jewish Community Center, it becomes a hate crime, and the sanctions are more significant. We've had two bomb threats to the Jewish Community Center in the last few weeks. Some guy broke into the Islamic Center over the weekend and tore up about 130 Qurans. There have been beatings in this community, unfortunately, of LGBT community. And we just are sending the message that we're going to do everything we can as a local governing body to up the ante on people when they demonstrate this kind of completely unacceptable behavior. Our hands are a little bit tied from the standpoint of how far we can go. The state statutes deal with felonies. We can deal with misdemeanors, though, and that's what we did. I just am really troubled by what we're seeing, what we're hearing, what we're reading. We need to send a message that Tucson, that little blue dot floating in this red sea, is not going to be a party to it.
Are there any leads in that Islamic center of vandalism there?
They have a picture of the guy, and in fact, this interestingly, the comment made by the TPD public information officer at the time was that we don't have any reason to believe that this was a hate crime. And so yesterday at the study session before we adopted this thing, I said, look, when the guy breaks in and rips up 130 Qurans, he's not making a statement about literacy. This is clearly a hate crime, and do we need to tweak the language in our ordinance to make it any more clear, or is it sufficiently clear as it is? And city attorney confirmed that, yes, in fact, that would qualify and constitute a hate crime. So, yeah, they've got video of the guy, and if they've got that, it's just a matter of time. So when we'll find him, and I'm you know, hoping it's soon.
How about that video evidence that the chief was asking folks for on that demonstration that kind of went bad a couple of weeks ago downtown?
And so that's another good example of how divided the community is. And so he has asked for that. He's reached out for it. I've talked to the chief about that specific incident. They are looking into it. Nothing's going to get swept under the rug. What troubles me, though, about body-worn cameras and you know, that bit of video is that it doesn't really place you at the scene. You get 12 seconds of a very tunnel vision piece of video. So what they've done, you don't know what happened before or after it, and so you can't really put yourself either in the cop's shoes or in the protester's shoes to see what was happening around you. So they're not just looking at the body-worn video. They've also got video from closed-circuit cameras that are on some of the surrounding buildings, and they've asked the public to bring in your own social media video as well. So they're going to do a completely thorough investigation on that. And if the officer involved in the pepper spraying was found to have been acting inappropriately, then he'll be punished for it.
Let's go back to the live line. Ingrid has called us at 790-2040. Hey, Ingrid.
Hi. Actually, I called in to ask about the so-called hate crime punishment.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that when you destroy property, you don't have love in your heart. And it shouldn't make any difference why you've destroyed the property. If you've torn up 130 books or whatever it was of any nature, you've destroyed property. If it's a collection of very old valuable books, that property should have more value than, say, some very recent fiction publications. Why are we getting ourselves involved in hate as part of the definition of a committed crime?
Okay. Go ahead, Steve Kasachek.
Because it is. We cannot tolerate, as a community, people committing crimes against others based on who they are, what they believe, what they look like, what religion they are, what color they are. That is not something that we're going to embrace. And so I fundamentally disagree that somebody walking into a library and tearing up a bunch of Dr. Seuss books is the same thing as walking into the Islamic Center and tearing up 130 Qurans, making a statement about what that class of people stands for, what they believe, and who they are. So there is not a moral equivalency between those two sets of behaviors, and I just disagree with Ingrid.
Are you concerned at all about this report out today that one in three shopping centers, big malls in this country, could be going out of business within 12 months? That could have serious implications, and I do not know if any of our local regional malls are on that list, but it does seem worrying for retail, doesn't it, Steve Kasachek?
Yeah, well, I don't know if there are any local ones either, but I can make two comments. Number one, people are doing a heck of a lot more shopping online these days and I'm guilty of that as well, especially around the holidays. You won't find me in a mall at a holiday time. I'm in front of a computer. That's one thing. And the second thing is, just sort of tangentially, is that I hope that bodes well for people who want to reinvest in the Broadway corridor, the Sunshine Mile, when we get around to finally redeveloping that people are looking for destinations and they're not looking for big shopping malls. People want to look for a sense of place and a place that they can walk to or bike to from their neighborhood, and they're not interested in going out to a big mall and fighting the public. So I'm not sure if any of those are local, but maybe it's sending a message also that people are sticking around closer to home and they're wanting destinations and not malls.
Speaking of destinations, congratulations to the Tucson Botanical Gardens, the folks at the Tucson Botanical Gardens being named one of the top botanical gardens in North America. They received that honor up in Canada, the organization that looks over these things. Another feather in our cap when it comes to tourism, Steve Kasachek.
Yeah, isn't that cool? Because Michelle Conklin runs the Botanical Gardens, and they were ranked in the top 10 gardens to travel to, gardens worth traveling to. And it's not just in southern Arizona. That is both the United States and Canada. So that's a really cool designation for them. She does a great job over there, but it's not just her. It's all in any one of those kinds of places. It's the same thing as at the Wildlife Center. It's the volunteers, it's the docents, it's the staff. And the fact that she got that designation is really cool. So I'm glad that she got it. She earned it.
Steve Kasachek, thank you very much, sir.
Thanks a lot. Don't let Fitz get out of control in the next half hour.
I won't. If folks want to talk to Fitz, 790-2040. Ray, can I do a quick spot here? We've got time to do it. The Tucson, speaking of green things, the Botanical Garden. What about one of my favorite sponsors for beautiful plants? Be a great weekend to do gardening. Green Things, just west of the intersection of Dodge and River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They're at 3384 East River Road. The owners, Jan and Jack, have taken a property that originally was about 3 acres, 4 acres, now 13 acres, and they have done a beautiful job. Free gardening workshops, full listing of the workshops, go to GreenThingsAZ.com. David Fitzsimmons is next on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back. Tucson now has its own Creole restaurant. Capturing the spirit of New Orleans cuisine, Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails is located in St. Philip's Plaza at River and Campbell. The New Orleans-inspired menu includes a full range of gumbos and much-loved beignets. See you at Saz Creole Kitchen and Cocktails. Open daily, 8 a.m. to midnight at St. Philip's Plaza.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. And with almost 60 flights a day taking off from Tucson International Airport nonstop to San Diego, Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Oakland, San Francisco, Salt Lake City, Denver, Portland, Seattle, Dallas, Houston, Minneapolis, Chicago, Atlanta, New York, and easy one-stop connections to hundreds of destinations around the world, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
Today, more than ever, consumers want to work with the businesses they trust. At BBB, we also want to honor their efforts for doing business the right way. Hi, this is Suzanne Miller with your Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, reminding you that our annual Torch Awards are happening on Friday, April 7th at 5:30 p.m. at Casino del Sol. It will be a fun, elegant evening of celebration, and we hope you will join us. Register today at tucson.bbb.org. Thanks for doing business the right way, Southern Arizona.
The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective, featuring regional, national, and international news, local opinion, and views from top national columnists, business and technology news, auto reviews, books, and the box office, plus sports and a look back at the Old West. The Southern Arizona News Examiner, reporting from a different perspective. Free subscriptions at soaznewsx.com.
As a small business owner, I know the importance of a certified public accountant you can trust. That's why I recommend my CPA, Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates, proud sponsors of the Buckmaster Show. Located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com or follow the live link on buckmastershow.com. If you're searching for that special one-of-a-kind item, may I suggest Adobe House Antiques. It has a vast collection and variety of antiques, lighting, and fine art. In addition to the interior space, a large outdoor location offers an extensive collection of vintage patio furniture, exterior lighting, and ironwork. Come see Penny at 2700 North Campbell, 325-9439, or on the web at adobehouseantiques.com. Vero Amore is Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, panini, and salad is homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino and on Dove Mountain Boulevard in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore on the web at veroamore.com.
Welcome back. back. A great weekend to take a road trip. We strongly recommend the 3-hour drive over to Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, a beautiful portion of the Southwest United States. So much to do over there. The Gila National Forest and Wilderness, beautiful scenic drive, great birding, especially this time of year, many hiking opportunities. There's several dozen recreation opportunities that are listed on the website, southwestnewmexico.org, and they've got some really nice places to stay over in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico, one of our fine sponsors. Pretty much since day one that we began this venture about 6 years ago. All right, David Fitzsimmons with me in studio. Mr. Fitzsimmons has, I would say, a devoted following of his cartoons, his humorous columns and blogs for the Arizona Daily Star, a Pulitzer Prize finalist. Fitz has helped, as we were talking about earlier, millions of dollars he's helped out in raising for Tucson charities. He does probably well over 100 events a year helping out groups. He also raises something else with his award-winning cartoons, and that is the blood pressure of those that believe that David Fitzsimmons is just far too liberal. His detractors send him nasty notes, and they make calls threatening to cancel their subscriptions to his employer, the Arizona Daily Star. But Fitz, first of all, hello.
Hello, Bill. Thanks for inviting me to be on your show. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Thank you. It's my pleasure as well. I was going to say, they threaten to drop the subscription to the Star.
Yes.
But I have to say that the job description of being an editorial cartoonist is you're probably going to anger and 50% of the people are not going to like what the cartoon says.
Exactly. I feel it's my job to generate ire, to keep those cardiac specialists in Green Valley busy.
I mean, it's the cartoon is a launching pad, kind of the way I look at it. It's a launching pad for discussion, but people get so offended if the resonation is going the way they don't like.
It still astonishes me that lines on paper would excite an individual to such an extent that they'd want to move to their computer to send me an angry email. My favorites are the ones that are rife with cursing and obscenities. Mm-hmm. Dear blank, blank you, blank your cartoons, blank yourself, signed anonymous. Like I wouldn't recognize my mom's handwriting. Come on.
The anger level, compare that to when you really started with the Star. There really is no comparison, is there?
I would agree with that, yes. I started in 1886, back when Geronimo was a paper boy and Padre Kino was reviewing recipes in our newspaper. And the world seemed a bit gentler back then. I'm sure it's probably because I'm an old man. I have a nostalgic perspective. But there is a great deal of rancor today. And the divisions are very clear. And there really is not any middle ground, which I find a bit perplexing and frustrating because I know this will astonish my critics, but I've often thought of myself as a flaming moderate at the fringe of the center. Mm-hmm. But by Arizona standards, I guess I am a flaming Bolshevik, liberal, Trotskyite, commie threat to Western civilization.
790-2040, if you would like to speak with David Fitzsimmons, he would be delighted. I think he'd be delighted just to hear what is on your mind. He's always open to whatever the comments are, within reason, I'm sure.
Well, the more hostile, the better, frankly.
Yeah. And so, you know, come on, let's hear from you, folks. I know that on your Facebook, I'm one of your devoted Facebook friends, and some of the times you put up these these calls that come into your answering service.
I do.
It's so nice that you can see your facial expression as you're listening to some of these people.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, you can find my Facebook page, and you get an opportunity to hear the sort of voicemails that I receive on a on a regular basis in response to my cartons, and they're delicious and delightful, I find, because they're so filled with rancor. They're just amusing.
Did you grow up in a liberal household?
I grew up in a moderate middle ground household somewhere between Harry Truman and Richard Nixon. My father was a master sergeant. My two brothers were career military men. So I grew up in a military family. Well, perhaps that explains my political leanings. The Vietnam War politicized me, plus growing up in the military, a socialist paradise where all your needs are met.
Let's go to the live line. Richard is called. Hey, Richard.
Hey, guys. David, of course, I know you're very grounded in science and believe in science, and so I wanted to let you know, as a fourth-generation Oklahoman, I've been talking to some of my old buddies back in Oklahoma.
Yes.
About the earthquakes, and what it truly turns out to be, David, is a liberal conspiracy. these earthquakes in Oklahoma are actually caused by a fissure from the San Andreas Fault in California.
Interesting.
So, they are actually causing the earthquakes back there, and that fissure is actually 7,000 years old, the same age of the Earth.
That is fascinating. Yeah.
So anyway, I wanted to get you up to date on science, okay, so you'll know what's going on.
Well, thank you so much. Now, I'm always grateful for readers and callers who want to keep me informed about the issues that matter. So I'm grateful to Richard for that call.
Thank you, Richard, for keeping us in the loop. 790-2040 for David Fitzsimmons. So your dad was a master sergeant.
Yeah.
And you moved to Tucson at the ripe old age of one.
Of one. Yeah. And so my dad had this wonderful back porch duty. And I grew up on the Air Force Base, which was a wonderful place to grow up. It also shaped my politics because I was the one white face on a rainbow block of kids. So I learned early the merits of cultural diversity.
What year was that?
Oh, my goodness. That was in the, gosh, I was born in 55. And I graduated from Rincon High School here in town in 73 and then the U of A in 77. Traveled and worked elsewhere around the country in the mid 80s and came back here 86, just in time for the glorious rule of Governor Evan Mecham.
You did not grow up wanting to be a cartoonist?
No, I grew up wanting to be an officer in the United States Air Force. That makes me laugh now. But I was deadly serious.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Did you go to ROTC?
I was a Civil Air Patrol kid. I was all ready to go to sign up for ROTC. I had the officer's manual in my hand. When both of my brothers returned from beautifully exotic Vietnam, one of them was a Charlie Company medic, the other was an Air Force officer, and they slapped that manual out of my hands. And my older brother, Bob, said that it's not for me, that I'm the kind of guy who'd be killed first day out by my own men. I follow that wise counsel.
Yeah. So when did you take up art?
I took up art, I would say, in high school. I worked for the school newspaper. I was shuttled in the direction of the school newspaper by teachers whom I annoyed with my precocious free associative behavior in the classroom. They said, could you do something constructive? So I was sent to the direction of the yearbook staff and the school newspaper staff. And also in the 70s when I was in school, Watergate was breaking, and that was politically intriguing. So it was a perfect environment, the stew from which a good cartoonist could emerge.
Was there a particular cartoonist then that you looked at? And there were some terrific cartoonists, especially during the Watergate era.
Oh, yeah, there were. There was Paul Conrad of the Los Angeles Times, who was brutal. And Nixon hated him so much that Otis Chandler compromised and moved Paul Conrad's cartoons to the op-ed page of the Los Angeles Times. And there was also Pat Oliphant at the Washington Star, and of course, Jeff McNally, the wonderful cartoonist from the Richmond Times-Dispatch, who created the comic strip Shoe. Those are the folks that I admired when I was young.
Who hired you at the Star?
Steve Auslander hired me at the Star in 86. And by then, I was working at another newspaper across the country in Norfolk, Virginia. For the very first editorial page editor who hired me, who was a conservative Republican and my best friend at the time in the Norfolk area, a fellow named Tony Snow.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then, of course, 1988, that's when I started over at Channel 6, and I remember my first week.
Yeah.
You're going to be interviewing Governor Evan Meekum, and I'm
wow.
going, who is this guy? Governor Meekum.
Wow, and no one prepares you for an interview
no,
like that.
No, are you
with
kidding?
Evan Meekum.
And
that's
then, you
right.
know, and then everything happening with the impeachment, so it was certainly a trial by fire. Let's take a break right here. We'll have more with David Fitzsimmons on The Buckmaster Show. If you'd like to join 790-2040 and enhance our conversation, we'll be right back with Fitz.
Traveling is more than just the flight. It's the whole experience. In money saved, in time saved. Almost 60 flights take off every day from Tucson International Airport and announcing the newest destination, New York.
American Airlines, now boarding nonstop to JFK.
Daily nonstop service to New York starts October 7th with connections across the Atlantic and throughout the Northeast. Now with 18 nonstop destinations from Tucson, you can get there from here. Travel smart. Travel TUS and flytucson.com. It's the way to go.
The Regional Transportation Authority works with its member jurisdictions, the business community, project neighbors, and the broader community to deliver transportation projects promised in 2006. This collaborative effort is a model of diverse interests coming together for the benefit of the region. This spirit of regional collaboration helps us address the mobility and safety needs in all of our communities. Better roads, better transit, better choices, a better future. More at rtamobility.com. On a changing planet, the University of Arizona's Biosphere 2 has been diving deeper and looking closer while energizing, innovating, conserving, and advancing science on an unparalleled scale to better understand the natural systems around us and to inspire our future generations. For 10 years now, UA Biosphere 2 has explored our planet's future. Come, explore it yourself. Open daily, biosphere2.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local independent nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year, and if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
It's a land and cruise vacation sale at Bon Voyage Travel. Plan your dream vacation now and save big, up to 65%. Alaska, Hawaii, Europe, South America, the Caribbean, pick your perfect destination. Bon Voyage Travel will create your exclusive getaway that includes extra perks and bonuses you won't find anywhere else. Call Bon Voyage Travel today or visit bvtravel.com.
The excitement is building for the grand opening in early 2017 for the Twisted Tandoor. The legendary Indian food truck will now have a permanent brick-and-mortar home at Swan and Camp Lowell Drive. The menu will be an expansion of the Indian classic offerings from the original Twisted Tandoor food truck. The Twisted Tandoor, coming in early 2017 at 4660 East Camp Lowell Drive. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. David Fitzsimmons, Fitz of the Arizona Daily Star, is with us. If you'd like to join the conversation, 790-2040. Do you remember the first cartoon that was published for you?
And yes,
what
do.
What was the topic?
Man, I love that boogaloo music in
there
the background.
Thanks to Ray for that.
The very first cartoon in 86, I think it was January 1st, was a cartoon about terrorism of all things. Hmm. Yeah, it was the infant new year being greeted in the nursery by a swarthy looking individual tapping on the glass labeled terrorism. So I've always been mindful about it, I guess, but it's fairly prescient. It's kind of curious to me when I found the old cartoon that was the first cartoon I did a million years ago, maybe
and
even longer.
The first, that was in Richmond, right?
No, that was here in Tucson. The first political cartoon I did in Richmond was about a Christian Broadcasting Network, and I cannot remember the statement in the cartoon or the context, but it was poking fun at Pat Robertson.
You know, you grew up in this town, and I was here originally in the 60s, came out here from Chicago to go to the U of A in 65 to 69. It's always been the community, certainly around the university, has always been a bastion of liberalism.
Oh, yeah. But, I think of it as Berkeley surrounded by Adobe.
Yeah. But correct me here if I'm wrong, but the change has happened where more of the conservative folks moving into the Marana, Oral Valley area.
I agree. The retirement communities. Right. Yes, And Raytheon.
And that has changed
and the Air Force
kind of
Base.
The conversation. Yeah. And I'm not saying in a good or bad way, but it has changed the dynamic.
Yeah, it has changed. I think it's moderated the city overall. It's made us a purple valley.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, rather than red or blue. But I have to say, you know, after this election, I was out at Saddlebrook, invited to address the Saddlebrook Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
There were hundreds of people in the audience, and I had never seen such an energized crowd. Same thing was true for the Sahuarita Democrats when I addressed them. It was just, it's remarkable. I guess they're coming out of the closet.
Do you think this is going to carry over into the midterm elections?
That is such a good question, and I am not Nostradamus. I wish I knew. There seems to be a lot of energy, but who knows if it will dissipate or not, because, of course, as you know, the next step is actual action, registration, voting, and such.
And a candidate that will go up against Congresswoman Martha McSally. I keep hearing that there are some big names that are waiting in the wings, but until we see a candidate, I really don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, I've seen none that dazzle or impress me.
Dave Fitzsimmons with a 790-2040, if you would like to join in the conversation. You know, looking back over your life, was there some kind of a turning point, perhaps a health issue that changed your life, Dave?
Well, about a decade ago, I was lucky enough to get cancer, bladder cancer. So I could join all my fellow family members who are also cancer survivors. In fact, we call ourselves a cancer cluster, family reunions. For myself, it was bladder cancer, and I got 90 minutes of comedy gold out of the experience, plus the keen awareness that I'm mortal. So I'm still blessed to consider every day a gift. So I'm very lucky in that regard.
So there had been cancer in the family.
Oh, yes. My mother perished from it. My brother perished from it. My sister perished from it. I'm surprised our golden retriever didn't get it. Was that a tumor on your goldfish? I don't know. Yeah. I think that's also where I acquired my tasteless sense of humor from. Both my parents were very resilient, economically disenfranchised Caucasians. And when cancer struck, they dealt with it with humor.
You know, when you do these charity events, and I've been fortunate to be at quite a few of them, when you do these caricatures of people, what is it? Is there, I'm sure you look at things a little bit differently than someone who does not have that discipline for drawing and doing it. Is there something that just jumps out at you? Maybe it's some prominent feature, the nose or the lips?
Well, generally it's the hair. I try try to look at a face almost as if it's a postage stamp image and try to discern what are the most primary, what are the primary characteristics. In your case, I've never seen a nose quite like that. Is a remarkable.
The Buckmaster nose.
The Buckmaster nose.
Mm.
That is just remarkable. And you have the ears of a good listener. That's that is impressive. And your hairline is like my hairline. Uh-huh. We're almost Nixonian.
Yeah. It's been going back.
It is happening. I'm surprised how people tend to keep these caricatures. That's what
they do.
Really amazes me. And I have a quick story. A mom called me.
Go
and
ahead.
She said, my son died last year. Oh, ma'am, I'm so very sorry. You drew a caricature of him when he was in elementary school. I lost the caricature. It really seemed to capture him. Could you redraw the caricature for me? And I thought, well, I'll give it a try. Do you have pictures of him? Send me the pictures. So I drew them, and I decided to hand deliver the drawing to the mom, and I knocked on the door. She lived in the Pie Island neighborhood, and I handed her the drawing, and she kind of teared up, and she invited me inside, and I watched her pin the cartoon caricature of her son on the wall to his bedroom, which she had left just the way it was when he died. I assumed it was a disease that had taken his life, and I said, well, what took his life? And she said he committed suicide.
Oh.
And she said, in this very room. And then she touched the drawing and teared up again. And then I said, I was so very sorry. And I said, why? And she said, well, it's his father. He's in prison. I said, oh, I'm so sorry to hear that. And she said, I'm not. He assaulted and molested the child. At that point, I just hugged the woman and had to say my goodbye. But as I turned around and looked over my shoulder, I saw that she was looking at the drawing, and she tenderly touched the face of the child that I had drawn, and I was amazed at the power of lines on paper because it restored to her a very positive memory, so I was happy for that.
When you envision your work and the how it's going to eventually wind up in the paper,
yes.
What is the chronology of working that in and to the paper? Is it a 24-hour process? Is it less than that, or how do you work?
That's a good question. Generally, I will sketch out the drawing early in the morning, sketch out drawing ideas, finalize an image in an hour, and then compose that image from a rough to a final piece, scan it, add the color, and then send it out to the syndicate that distributes it among 800 sites worldwide. For example, yesterday I had the idea, well, where does Donald Trump get his wacky ideas? What are his sources? And I thought, well, you know, when I was standing in line at Walmart, I noticed the strange newspapers, the pulp tabloids. I thought, that's got to be his source. So it didn't take me long to sketch out the image of the president in disguise in a Walmart looking at the tabloids.
So your
vaccines cause autumn.
Your work is seen in 800 publications?
Yeah, on average 800.
You said around the world.
Around the world, yeah.
Canada.
I've gotten emails from Singapore.
Wow.
South of France, yeah.
Let's go.
Moscow.
Oh, wow. Let's go back to the live line, and I think we have Terry with us. Hey,
yeah.
Terry.
Yeah, hi, Bill and David.
Hi, Terry.
Hi. And I don't always read the paper, but that's not because of you. I want to say this. What Republican could you follow or pretty much respect or have voted for, and I appreciate the call. Thank you.
Thank you, Terry.
Okay.
Oops. That's an easy one. I could think of Mayor Bob Walkup, for one. And a number of the legislators, that have represented my district, folks like Pete Hershberger, Tony, and others. But then again, those folks are what I would consider moderate centrists. Ray Carroll, absolutely. Once again, another moderate centrist. So I have supported Republicans, but I think what has happened is the Republican Party has lost its immoderate nature and thus has become, for me, a target-rich environment.
Mm-hmm. And some have even said that John F. Kennedy would probably be considered a moderate these days.
Yeah, I'd say a moderate Republican because of the tax breaks.
Yeah,
sure, absolutely.
So there, you know, you mentioned a couple of folks. The Hirschberger, certainly Representative Hirschberger, was a guy who could work across the aisle. Jim Colby worked across the aisle. Mo Udall, and those folks. You wonder if we'll ever see the likes of that type of politician again.
Yeah, I'm somewhat pessimistic because I have found that the Republicans I've encountered in political life absolutely are rigid in their hatred and loathing of liberals, moderates, and progressives. So in a sense, I would say that my behavior, my modus operandi is in reaction to that that rather cold.
But you would welcome a return to the moderatism.
Oh, absolutely. But I think we'd have to go back to Dwight Eisenhower and Everett Dirksen.
From my home state, Everett Dirksen of Illinois. Okay.
That's right. Yeah.
David Fitzsimmons, always a pleasure. Thank you, Fitz.
My pleasure, Bill. Good to see you.
Good to see you. Coming up this afternoon, Mike Check with Mike Shaw, Ray Allen, ably assisting Mike on the other side of the glass, and then Wake Up Tucson 6 to 9. Our newest show is called Talking Culture. Then me, Bill Buckmaster, back with you tomorrow for our Thursday edition of The Buckmaster Show. Hope you have a great afternoon and evening.